Mini episode 1815 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1815. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, a relatively newly minted dignitary in the last couple of years, but you know him, of course, as an expert in the fields of fitness and pop culture, author of the legendary Fitness Made Simple, of course, a Vine icon back in the days of that late lamented platform, and of course, you can catch him always with twice a week, JB's Fantastic Finds on Facebook. And, of course, you see that advertised in many places these days as the show continues to get bigger and better. And it is our great honor that we've always had him, and we've talked awards shows with him over a period of time. We were talking about this off air. First, we're on the show together in 2012 in person in New York City. 2014 is the first time we did one of these things here. We almost always get together around the time of the Oscars. We've worked in a few other awards shows over a period of time, but you might have guessed it, the 2025 Oscars. We're here to talk about this, and there's nobody better to do it with than John Baystow. Keeping the tradition going, my friend. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for that awesome intro. The only thing it's lacking is that awesome moniker, FDH Dignitary, because yeah. I must hear it every time I am on the show, FDH Dignitary.
You are a a well-established dignitary at this point, my friend, with your many appearances here that you've made over a period of time. Always love breaking down all of this with you, and so many different aspects that we get into with the awards shows. But of course, the evergreen, every time we get together and talk about one of these things, is the red carpet. So This was one where, again, in looking at it, I felt like this was a year where it was a little bit more reserved overall. You've made the point to me in the past, I think justifiably so, that compared to the Emmys, compared to the MTV Music Awards, other things, the Oscars are almost a little bit more subdued. And that was kind of the case this year. I do have a list of things that I noticed that I'm going to go through, but it was, as far as if we're talking an award ceremony that is generally somewhat more subdued than the other ones, then this one was perhaps more along those lines. It was more like a typical Oscars year than ever before, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it has. I mean, like when you compare it to the whole award season with like, off the wall things like the MTV Awards compared to then the Grammys, which goes really, really wild. And then the Emmys. I mean, the Oscars tend to be more like the I like to think of it as subdued glam. It's supposed to be glam and high profile, but not like off the wall, like batshit crazy.
Yes, that is true. I think that's a very good way of summing it up. And when you look at it here, again, there were some interesting and colorful outfits. I will start with somebody that is one of my favorite performers. Again, somebody who's very, very talented in the industry, but I'm very, very biased towards him personally. Timothy Chalamet, of course, going back to last fall, everybody I'm sure remembers on ESPN Game Day, the one guy that picked my alma mater, Ohio University, to beat our hated rivals Miami in the MAC championship game, Miami of Ohio, because they hate being called Miami of Ohio. He was with us. He's an honorary Bobcat, so I have to single him out first for that awesome yellow suit. I don't know if you caught that one, John.
How could you miss it? How could you miss it? It's funny. When I walk my dog, sometimes the days get shorter and the nights get longer and it gets super dark at the park. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, that would be like the perfect outfit to like never possibly lose sight of, because he could ride his bike home, as they were saying on the Oscars, in the dead of night, and he's good.
Yes.
Not going to get hit by a car. I know a lot of people online were comparing him to like, Banana. But but very, 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 very few people can, you know, have the balls to go full yellow to the Oscars or actually even out to 7-Eleven.
I love it. I love it. That's the kind of thing that I would do myself in such a similar situation. And by the way, yes, the legendary 7-Eleven Chronicles on Facebook.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, geez. I forgot about that.
I thought you mentioned that specifically because you know I'm a big fan of that.
No, because I still go. But about 7-Eleven Chronicles, yes, the bizarrety, yeah.
I hope that's your next book deal, John, is compiling all of those in a coffee table book, because that would be freaking awesome. Awesome.
But bring the coin and you never know. Yeah, you never know.
And then Chalamet, of course, ended up showing up in that skit with Adam Sandler, where Sandler was wearing the sweatsuit and was out there in the audience and came over and gave him a hug. So Chalamet factored into that as well. Somebody that this is
love Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler is one of my favorite stars ever, because I'm all about loyalty.
Yeah.
And I love the fact with Adam Sandler, with his movies, he has basically, it's almost like a traveling minstrel group. It's like the same cast of characters pretty much, or at least of the core characters that are pretty much in all of his movies. And a lot of them go back to like childhood friends and early start friends and stuff like that. And that just shows like an extreme loyalty, which is really, really cool. And something you do not see very often with a lot of phony people and stuff. So Adam Sandler is a G. And definitely, you know, someone that would be awesome to have as a friend, because I love the way he carries. He's like the rising tide that brings all boats up with it. Yeah. He brings all of his friends along with his success. And I love that.
I agree. And it's one of those things, too, where I'm glad that we're past that annoying trend in the 2010s where society sort of collectively agreed to pretend that he wasn't funny or talented or whatever and stale. I'm glad that we're past that point in time when everybody wanted to pretend that that was the case, because that was never the case. You know, he's done well. He's reinvented himself.
Whether it was the case in people's minds or not, you take that to the bank too. It's like, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show fame or like Toxic Avenger fame. Everybody would trash those types of movies, but I mean, they became so iconic that people would actually say the lines in the movies with them.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler was trashed for some of his movies and, you know, quality and the fact that he would, you know, turn them out quickly and stuff like that. But he ran with it and he turned it into multi-million dollar huge success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Big star.
Wasn't there one report like saying that he was like the highest paid actor when you filter in everything? He was like one of the, there was some sort of chart. You can Google it to check it. It may be a little bit back in the day, a few years back, could even be current. But he was like the highest paid or the highest grossing actor overall because of, he also has ownership, obviously, of his movies as well.
You know, and like you said, great businessman also, justifiably so. Somebody that's been, you know, a success on every level. And yeah, I'm glad that we're no longer in that tired, stupid period of time when people were just dumping on him and acting like he was stale and everything like that. I'm just glad that that's past us, because that was so ridiculous when that was the case. There's a name that I feel like comes...
You know, just one thing on that. You know, man, the hardest thing in this world, it doesn't matter whether people hate you, love you, or whatever. The hardest thing in this world is getting people to pay any type of attention to you.
Yep.
So if you're living rent-free in millions of folks' heads, whether it be for a negative, not too negative, but I mean, you know, as you're saying, making fun of him or whatever.
Yeah.
You're living rent-free in those heads and they're talking about you, you're winning.
You're absolutely right. That is the definition of winning. You are absolutely right about that. There's a name that I'm going to mention here next. And while I can't necessarily remember too many specific outfits that she had previously, it does seem like this is a name that's come up before, because she is somebody that's willing to be out there a little bit. And this wasn't a one that was particularly daring or anything like that, but it was interesting, particularly in the context of a relatively uninteresting red carpet. Halle Berry with the, Halle was doing the mirror ball gown. That was, you know, I mean, that was a different kind of a touch. I take my hat off to Halle Berry for that one.
Well, she was definitely one of the metallic trends. There was like metallic silver all over the place. You had Halle Berry doing that. You had, I think it was Mindy Kaling, if I'm not mistaken. You had metallic silver with Emma Stone. Even Demi Moore was doing that as well. So you had a lot of that. And also, who was it who was it with Oprah? And Whoopi Goldberg had it as well. Whoopi Goldberg with the metallic silver. But Halle Berry is another one of my favorites because I love her kick-ass movies when she, like, you know, just goes full ham on who's ever taken her kid or, you know, doing something to her family or, you know, basically trying to hurt somebody else. I love her action movies.
Yeah.
But she was awesome. And she replayed that. She also got another viral moment by on the red carpet, I think she did it, when she grabbed Adrian Brody and gave him that big kiss. She goes, now it's my turn. Because mm-hmm. going back in the day, was it 2004 or 2003?
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. When he ends up winning for, he ended up winning for The Pianist?
Or two. Pianist, 2002. That was, yeah, he did. And he
and he ended up kissing her on stage, which now, of course, you'd get vilified for doing. But right. I mean, back in the day, he did that, and that was a huge. Well, before, I guess, viral times even, or in the beginning of viral times. But that was a huge, iconic moment of the Oscars, and she played off on that by doing it. I even saw it when I was watching some of the pre-show coverage. A lot of times I have to check the clips with our shows and before our get-togethers and things, but this time I actually watched a lot, actually during the time. But she said, now it's my turn, and gave him a big kiss, which was really cool and cute.
And that was, so Adrian Brody, becomes a two-time winner in that category here, one of only a handful to have won best actor twice. Halle Berry, that was what she was wearing. Miley Cyrus, not so much a matter of her outfit, but I did see it called to the attention, and I looked at the picture, and oh yes, there's the bleached eyebrows. So Miley Cyrus needed to do at least something to stand out here. So
well, I love Miley. She's another. I love Miley, and I think and I love her. I think her godmother is Dolly Parton, who's another one of my absolute favorites.
She is. I didn't know that. Okay,
yeah, I believe that's her godmother. Wow. If I'm not mistaken.
Okay, wow, that's the six degrees of Kevin Bacon right there on that one. Cynthia Erivo, a black dress that it flared out. And maybe this is the HOA prez in me on how I measure these things, but it seemed like it flared out to three parking spots, John.
That was definitely both her and Ariana. Ariana had like the one of the pale pink dresses.
Yeah.
And once again, an unfortunate choice if you ever plan on sitting down. But yeah. but yeah, they were both definitely going to be talked about because they had the most. I guess that's one of those dresses you call, structural dresses.
Yes.
Like architecture. And they throughout the whole award season have been, very, very talked about. And then the fact that Wicked got very, very few awards of what it was nominated for has been another thing that's been very talked about.
Yeah. So that was, really something interesting there. Bowen Yang, he had on a black leather jacket as he was coming in, and I saw it described as having a floral theme to it, and maybe this is something that would get me canceled for presupposing this because of his ethnicity, but it seemed like it was more of an oriental type thing, which actually made it more badass to me. It's not like it had like a yin and yang thing there or anything like that, but it seemed like it was reminiscent of the place back at the mall back in the day that would sell the Chinese throwing stars and that kind of stuff. So I thought it looked badass.
That man is living his best life ever. For one of the Saturday Night Live cast members, with Saturday Night Live, it's a crapshoot a lot of times. You have some that are these enormous breakout stars and then others that you may just see on the reunion specials. And he is just, he's playing it all right.
He is. He's doing a really good job with that, and he has become one of the more substantial stars in this cast. In this whole era now, as they get to 50, and what is going to be the next group going forward. But he's certainly one of the biggest ones at this moment. And
I'm looking at the picture now actually of the actor you're talking about. We've actually had pieces. Asian style pieces on JB's Fantastic Finds that are very reminiscent of that jacket.
Okay. So it's not just me thinking it's Asian themed. Okay. So that's, I think it was on Yahoo.
It's cool.
Yeah. They were calling it floral and I'm like, it looks more like, Oriental theme to me.
It is. But it is horrible. But we've had some pieces with designs like that that have like a phoenix also coming out of them, and
right,
like jewelry pieces or a dragon coming out of that as well. But yeah, it's reminiscent of that.
And while we're talking here, I just Googled to make sure because I wasn't sure that I had jotted this down correctly. I didn't trust my handwriting. But an actress by the name of Raffi Cassidy, a sleek satin floor length dress. And what it was notable for was a big ass knot on her right shoulder.
And that's it. And when you're choosing that dress,
yeah,
that's exactly the commentary you're aiming for. Because when she hears a commentator then says, "Well, you know, Cassidy had this beautiful dress with a big ass knot on the back," she's like, "Nailed it! I must have graduated from carpentry school because nailed it. That's what I was after.
That's exactly what I was going for. That's right.
That's like calling a woman sturdy.
Yeah,
she's a sturdy woman.
Exactly." by the way, and a few other notes on anybody on the red carpet here. There wasn't anything that was necessarily noteworthy in terms of what she was wearing. But when I saw it, it was a very flattering thing on her, I must say, on Elle Fanning. And that's one of those things, Elle Fanning. I'm like, oh my goodness. Am I going to end up on some kind of horrible registry somewhere for saying this? And then I Googled it. She's 26 now, so I'm safe.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. Her sister Dakota's 31, so we're in the range where we can comment respectfully on both of them, John, and not be on a registry.
which is a very or not have to register in a new area when you first move there.
That's right.
Yes, 100. One person that got well. First of all, she won Best Actress, Mikey Madison.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people didn't really, they said her dress was like, nah, yeah, you know, like, but blah, or whatever. I was seeing a lot of other commentators saying it just, you know, it was neither here nor there. I thought she was great. I thought she was subdued, very, 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 very angelic looking, sort of like giving old Audrey Hepburn type vibes, and was awesome. I was very surprised that the Glitterati and the paparazzi and the people that do commentating, you know, really, they didn't say anything terrible about it, but there was not one person who said it was like a standout.
Yeah,
that,
well,
I saw
the Audrey Hepburn thing. I mean, that's interesting, and yes, you could see some parallels potentially to her, you know, dressing in that way and everything. But how's this for one heck of a segue? Because I know you got some thoughts on the movie. I think we would probably not say that this Nora movie is the Breakfast at Tiffany's of 2024. That was not exactly what that was.
No, and actually, you know what's really interesting? First of all, I've never seen her before, but I've seen her now in a number of interviews, and she's extremely demure, humble, very, very well-spoken, reserved, and I mean, I saw that that's one of the movies that this time, actually, oddly enough, a lot of times we'll talk about this and we always talk to say that none of these movies we've ever seen, but I actually saw that one.
Okay.
And she is off the wall. I mean, I thought she was good in the movie to begin with, but when I see how she is normally, I'm like, wow.
Well,
great actress, because I never would have imagined, because I mean, obviously you have to have acting chops and stuff like that, but a lot of times you see some of these actors in a part, and then you see them in an interview, and you're like, yeah, I can see that, you know, it's like, you know, it's a little different than the part maybe, but you can extrapolate them playing that part. With her, oh my God, yeah. Night and day.
Well, and I didn't recognize her or put two and two together, but there was a sitcom that she was on that I've caught a little bit of, the FX sitcom, because I am something of a fan of Pamela Adlon. It was her show, Better Things. So she plays one of the daughters on there. So she started, I guess, or her first big, maybe not necessarily started, but her first bigger thing was being on an FX sitcom as a, you know, quasi-child actor. So she... Yeah, I mean, you know, what a breakthrough to be able to get a role like this and perform like this. But this is a thing where, and you and I talked about this off air, there's different ways of looking at this movie, not necessarily in terms of it being, you know, like a Skinamax type movie, but perhaps, I think you were saying, somewhat maybe Cinemax-esque in terms of some of the cinematography and stuff.
Well, yeah, a lot of times movies now, I think maybe, you know how like growing up or back in the day, there are certain movies that are iconic that you think of, and it's like, Star Wars or way back in the day, but of course every kid sees it eventually, like Old Yeller or The Godfather. That there's just movies that, you know, you remember from generation to generation. And now a lot of times the movies you see are something like, wow, I could see that on, like, you know, Lifetime late at night. Or I could imagine that being on FX, like you were just talking about, or USA or something like that. And it's not something that you necessarily like pinpoint as being something that would only be in the theater from the way movies used to be when it had that shock and awe to it. I mean, this had a lot of jaw-dropping moments, but I could imagine this being an HBO production.
Yeah.
Well, and seeing it on HBO.
It is very interesting.
And that's not a dig. That's not a dig. It was, and her acting's amazing in it. I'm just saying it was something that could be on various platforms. It just happened to be, in my estimation, you know, on the big screen.
Sure, sure. I think today more than ever, there's more sort of blurring of, you know, what looks like it could appear where. I know that, you know, it used to be sort of almost purely art house type movies that would be up there in the Oscars. And it's predominantly still kind of the case. But then sometimes you get ones with a little bit of the flavor of what you're talking about in there. And that's another thing we were talking about off air the other day was just the whole thing of like box office versus, you know, critical acclaim, and that, you know, this year kind of shows as ever that it is very much tilted towards the latter, because in terms of any of these movies being any kind of water cooler fodder whatsoever, not at all. But
I saw one commentator, I'd love to give him credit because it wasn't me actually saying it firsthand. I always like to give credit where credit is due. But I have to, it bears repeating. There was one person who said, I think Anora made 50, I think it costs only $6 million to make an independent type film. And I love people that bust their ass and make it for as cheap as possible. Yes. And then achieve greatness like this. I love that story. I don't care what the movie, even if I hated the movie, and I didn't. But I mean, even if I hated the movie and at that type of success story, I would just admire those people, and it would be a great thing to talk about. I love that type of success.
Yeah, respect.
But I understand it cost $6 million. It made only $15 million US. And this one commentator had said, wow, that's like $10 million less than what Rachel Maddow collects on MSNBC.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, if that didn't put it in perspective.
Well, and in as much as it got an Oscar and it got other, you know, awards here along the way besides Best Actress, but, you know, money much better spent than what is spent on R. Maddow, you would say, as far as the return on investment, shall we say, very lopsided towards the movie. But other things here, and I did see the other day on Twitter, there is somebody that I follow for quasi-amusement purposes, a female journalist who a lot of times posts very wacky takes, and she was retweeting a whole tirade from this woman about, we talked about Adrian Brody before, that when he went up to the platform there to collect his award, that ended up flipping his chewing gum at his wife or girlfriend or whatever, and it, you know,
that's a ride or die right there.
Yeah, she dutifully lunged for it, and between that and Kieran Culkin, as he won Best Supporting Actor, using his entire thing as a play to get another kid or two out of his wife. And so this woman was going on a Twitter tirade. The journalist that I follow was retweeting a woman about, you know, there's men, you take moments like this in life, it's very revealing what they think of the woman in their life. They wait all their lives to humiliate the woman in their life in these moments. And it's just like, you know, you could sit there and think that it's goofy, and like, as I look at either one of those two moments, that's 0-for-2 on anything I would do personally. But man, you know, you got to lighten up a little bit when this kind of stuff happens. Don't think that you know these people and you know the insides of their lives and stuff. You know what I mean? That's obnoxious.
Well, there are some people that always look at the world through shit-colored glasses.
Yeah.
So no matter what they're seeing, it's just horrible. And they're the people that love to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And that's just where a statement like that comes from. Like you know, first of all, that's a cute viral moment, and it's probably something that the spouse or significant other appreciated, you know, in a funny way. It's just humorous. There's no other nasty type of. It's not like a dig at somebody,
right?
I mean, and to try to make it into a dig shows more about the person who's doing that than the actual words.
Exactly. You know, like on the whole thing with Kieran Culkin, who, again, you know, I'm a fan of and certainly loved him on Succession and everything like that. But the whole thing of just the, like, the fact that his wife agreed to do it if he won, that showed that she didn't believe in him. Well, that's him. He's taking passive aggressive digs at her that she didn't believe in him. And that basically, and it gets put, it gets calcified into as you go further into this tirade of like, well, back when they got together, she was too good for him, and now that he's a star, he's too good for her, and he's going to let her know about it. And in both instances, that's what this woman was psychoanalyzing Brody and Culkin to say that's what they were doing in that moment. And I'm just like, how sick is this to take something that, again, would I have done either of those two things on camera before the world? Nah, but come on, man. You know what I mean? To be that humorless, and like you said, it says a lot more about the person saying it than it does the people who do it.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And you know, those are the type of people you can read their assessments of things, and you just gotta laugh because obviously it's a purpose they didn't intend, but they are providing humor.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. However unintentional it is,
and it's good humor. You get a hearty laugh out of some very very delusional, you know, misguided and extremely unaware folk.
You do. You absolutely do. And so you had all of that happening, and as far as other things up there at the lectern for the night, Conan O'Brien as the host, I think, striking a good tone for the night. He was a guy
yes.
where he was perfect in a year where they really didn't want to go political because Hollywood politics are more out of fashion than usual in America in 2025. So, I mean, he was the perfect guy for the moment. You don't have to worry about Jimmy Kimmel getting up there and sticking his foot in his mouth with some kind of unfunny rant about this or that or whatever. Conan's just going to get up there and be funny. He struck a serious tone when it came to the LA fires and everything like that. I mean, it seemed to me like he hit all the right notes. And I say that as somebody who, again, admittedly, I've been a big fan of his ever since he came on the scene.
No, I think he did great too. I mean, there were a couple of veiled digs and stuff like that. I think there's one thing he said, if I'm not mistaken, where he goes, "And Enora's doing great today. I think it's gotten two awards already. Great to see somebody standing up to a powerful Russian." So I mean, there was
yeah,
you know, there's a few little lighthearted digs, but
sure.
Nowhere near the type of which is why Hollywood gets such a bad rap in so many ways, because while their viewpoints may be one way, a lot of times they're diametrically opposed to the majority of the country, which is why, you know, they sort of paint themselves in a box that way. So it's sometimes good just to stay out of that sandbox completely and just not mention it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for the most part, you saw more restraint than usual when it came to that kind of stuff. A couple of folks who do have some thoughts on a lot of the social issues of the day here. Oprah and Whoopi Goldberg, we talked about this off air a little bit. They were the ones that did the Quincy Jones tribute. And that was something where it was necessary, I think, to take a moment out that, again, a man from the field of, you know, way more so music than movies, but he had enough of an impact on movies that you did need to acknowledge him at the Oscars. They did
right.
That. They picked big enough stars to be able to do that. But that was just something where I know the way that it was done, it sort of tickled your fancy a little bit as far as some of the aspects of it.
Well, it's just funny because, I mean, you got to – back in the day when Oprah first started her magazine, she was getting lauded by, oh, what a great story. She's bringing this to light. She's bringing that to light. And, I mean, and I liked Oprah showing her rise to fame. And once again, you know, Rags to Riches, great success story. When we were first – when I was on a show when I was still in school called Images, and I was at the NatP convention, she was really sweet. And, you know, she would stop by our booth every time, and I got to, you know, meet her and stuff like that, which was cool. But I remember when her magazine came out and I said, wow, this is the only person in the world that could literally put herself on the cover of every one of her magazines and get no shit for it.
Yeah.
No back talk, no nothing. And it was just funny when she went up here with Whoopi and they're talking about The Color Purple. And she goes, well, you know, that was my first movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
and I'm like, gotta love the way you just turn the spotlight right back on yourself. And Whoopi like takes a step back at one point and she goes, yeah, okay, and it was a big one for me too.
You know, you said that to me the other day, and I said, I have a thought, but I'm going to hold it back for when we're recording.
You got to love it and respect it, though, because you walk in your authority and nobody's you got to be your number one cheerleader in this world, because if you aren't, nobody else is going to be, and you're faced with so much negativity that you've just got to keep pushing forward both your interests, your projects, your viewpoints, and everything. But that just cracks me up. And so nothing changed. It's like the same from back in the day to today.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we were talking the other day, the immediate thought that I had when you were talking about her tendency to do that, her tendency to make things about herself, was Oprah crawled so Taylor Swift could walk.
There you go.
And I bungled the punchline. Taylor Smith. That shows you it's late at night, man. I'm a little too tired. I bungled the punchline, John.
She has her own fun things. I when she would start winning awards, and sometimes she'd be winning so many awards back when she was starting with country, and stuff like that. And every time she went to the microphone, I was like, oh my god, I won.
Yeah.
Oh, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you were entered. Second of all, you won 17 previous awards. Third of all, you were the favorite. I'm thinking, and she goes, I can't believe this. How did this happen? I'm shocked.
Well, if not for the fact that Kanye has proclaimed himself a Nazi, if it wasn't for that, I would be making the joke right now. Remember when we thought Kanye was the bad guy there? But I can't make that joke because he said he's a Nazi. So that takes that off the table for all of society. But those were some of the defining moments, I think, of the night for me. Was there anything else that really jumped out at you?
Well, very interesting. But one thing that jumped out at me a little bit was another movie I saw. Well, first of all, I love her. Demi Moore. I mean, I remember back in the day, when I had like chicken pox when I was a little tiny kid, I had to be home for a week from school, like, when you're recuperating or because you're contagious or whatever. And my grandmother, Nana, who would watch me, had her stories on, which was, ABC stories. So she has like, All My Children, One Life to Live, General Hospital. So, and from that week, I got hooked on those shows, you know, because it was on like constantly. And the thing is, Demi Moore was Jackie Templeton, if I'm not mistaken, with that crazy memory of mine, on General Hospital. So I've seen her since I was a little kid. And then, and a lot of the times the soap opera stars, you don't see going into other venues, let's say, sometimes, or rarely you do. And when I saw her going into Ghost, and I'm like, what a great success story and all this other stuff. Ended up seeing the movie The Substance, which again was a very, very unusual movie. Definitely a movie I never thought I'd see with the Oscars, but I was 100% behind rooting for her, just because I followed her journey all this time.
Yeah.
But I never was a bigger fan of hers than when I saw her segment on Hot Ones, because that woman is, you can always tell a strong lady. Her stock rose 100% and it was already high in my mind. And a person I never cared either way about necessarily, Ariana Grande. I mean, she has some good songs and stuff like that, but she's another one that was just a complete badass, a complete gangsta thug on Hot Ones. I mean, you see people like melt on that show with eating the spicy wings and in physical pain. And both of them are just like, well, this one's good, this one's tasty, showing no visible signs of anything. And I'm like, these people have been through stuff and they know how to handle difficult situations.
Yes. And I will say that, I you mentioned that to me the other day. I definitely want to watch that Hot Ones segment because, again, Demi Moore, I've never seen her in anything where she hasn't done a really, really good job. She's just a top-notch pro. And for somebody that's had her struggles in recent years here and things that she's had to go through, I was rooting for her to win the Best Actress thing here. Just like as somebody who just was rooting for her personally, that would have been pretty cool if she could have won that. But alas, it was not to be. So that's a moment.
She won a lot. I mean, she made a huge mark with that movie, which was just a bizarre movie. I mean, I definitely understood the message, and there were some scenes that were extremely memorable. It's a very, very difficult movie. It's a very, it has a lot of very physically memorable moments just because of how grossed out you are. Like this one scene, there's a lot of blood and there's a lot of other stuff in there, but this one scene of Dennis Quaid eating shrimp.
Okay.
And just like a close up of his mouth eating shrimp. And it's physically, I mean, you throw up in your mouth a little. You can't watch it the whole time. It's the grossest scene you could ever imagine. And it's basically a metaphor for how Hollywood chews you up and spits you out, because he's like chewing the shrimp and then making the sound of him, you know, masticating the shrimp and everything. And they do a super close up of it. And then he pulls out, you know, the piece of the shrimp that you throw away, the little tail. And he's talking to her the whole time. And the whole scene is just on his mouth chewing the shrimp. One of the hardest scenes I've ever had to watch.
I can only imagine. Yeah. Cause I mean, I've never really
watched it. I'm telling you, watch it. There's a lot of things in that movie that are just, I mean, visually just bizarrely grotesque that you do not anticipate.
I've never thought about that particular thing there, but as far as things that you couldn't find sexy if anyone did them.
If you're a person who loves Dennis Quaid and thinks of the Reagan movie or other things, where you think of him in a certain way, watch him as the sleazy Hollywood agent or producer, I guess producer in this case, eating shrimp in the extreme close up. You will never forget it. I had to turn away because the sound effects and just the goo, the spittle, and the just all the gunk in the mouth. It was just you throw up in your mouth. You visit as I'm watching the movie. You know, it's a hard watch.
Well. I don't think there's anybody that you could see in that scene, as I think about that, where that would be appealing. And I think the ultimate test of that would be is I will cite what I consider to be the apex of American womanhood today, which is the 6'4" blonde in the WNBA, Cameron Brink. If Cameron Brink was to be chewing shrimp like that in a movie, I think I would be repulsed. And I didn't think Cameron Brink and repulsed would ever be in the same sentence for me, brother.
If you ever want to turn anybody off, or if you have a stalker and you just want the stalker to go away, just do a scene. Just tape a scene of you eating shrimp like Dennis Quaid. And there's nobody that'll be able to get that out of their head.
Deterring a stalker, huh? I guess I can look forward to in my inbox in my email in 48 hours, Cameron Brink sending me a video of her eating shrimp. See, this is the kind of great ad libs you and I are capable of.
When we go back and forth. It is definitely the best method of birth control or sexual deterrent you could possibly have. It was just I thank God I had not eaten just before this movie, because I could not believe that. I could not believe that scene. There were a few scenes like that, you know, with obviously you see even Conan imitated a scene of him coming out of Demi Moore's back like the clone or the second personality does in the movie and stuff like that. But there's parts of that that are you see the blood and the gore and stuff like that. It's a hard watch.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
It's a visual tour de force.
Yeah.
And ride into the bizarre and insane.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that is pretty crazy. And again, not something.
But how she took those wings on hot wings like a boss. She's a star.
I look forward to seeing that. Yeah, that's good. Like I don't know if there's like too many people in Hollywood where you look at them and like when they're doing good, you feel like it's a feel good story. Your mileage may vary on how deep that list is. But like she's one of the ones for me because she's somebody where, I mean, I remember her back to the Brat Pack days and everything like that. She's always been super talented. And again, just with some of the twists and turns that she's had
and
to endure.
Longevity.
Yeah. Yeah.
She would definitely be one of the ones for me too. That's a amazing, amazing success story.
Yeah.
And she's got, you know, balls of steel as far as that goes, because you could just tell, I mean, anybody who rises to that level of success in Hollywood, you know, they've been through things. They've seen life. And for you to be able to also, you have to be able to handle your shit with that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And she obviously can. And I think Ariana Grande is another one with a spine of steel in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, again,
she comes across as so sweet and so demure also in interviews. I was watching some of her interviews with the Wicked stuff,
uh-huh.
but I mean, she's a powerhouse also, I think.
I made the joke before about, you know, the Fanning sisters and feeling like you should have to be on a registry to talk about them, that there was a joke on the great Canadian sitcom Letterkenny when somebody was lusting after Ariana Grande, and one of the guys was like, she looks like she's 12. You need to be on a sex offenders list. But, yeah, she got a very powerful voice for her size. Let's definitely say that. So.
And a spine of steel, I will tell you.
I'll have to check out the Hot Ones episode there. And
she's also funny. She also comes with receipts. What I like about her is I could tell, usually you can extrapolate some things about, you know, how a person is when they're approaching their job or approaching something that they care about. She came to Hot One with receipts. She's actually talking with the host, Sean, and he's saying how, you know, how she's not fazed by the wings and stuff like that. She goes, so really? So how am I doing on a scale from DJ Khaled to Lord? Which I took from, like, you know, the biggest scaredy cat, for lack of a more, you know, demonstrative word.
Bullseye.
Politically correct. To, like, and I didn't see Lord's episode, but I guess Lord was a boss as well, apparently. Uh-huh. She's saying on a scale from, like, DJ Khaled, who peaced out after, like, two wings or something like that, like, really early on, and he's, you know, mocked for that a lot. On a scale from that to... who apparently, you know, was like, you know, spine of steel again with Lord. And Sean was like, oh, well, you're way in the Lord range.
I will say this.
Demi Moore is also way up. They're like equal. They were totally unfazed. Shocking.
Well, I will say this. If the FDH Lounge someday reaches a scale where I might procure an invitation to the show, I'm going to take DJ Khaled right off the list right there. I will be the biggest pansy out of the bunch. I do not like hot wings. My favorite kind of wings is mild, which I know this would horrify you being the fitness guy, but you know how they make mild buffalo wings as opposed to the regular ones, right? You know what they cut the sauce with.
What do they do? No, I don't.
They cut the sauce with butter. That's why mild wings are so rich. So,
they must be full with more fat too.
I think they are. Yeah, I think they are. Which, you know, one look at me, yeah, that checks out. But, you know, that's a thing where. But I would take DJ Khaled right off the list there because I do not like hot wings. I don't like them that hot. I don't like the supper.
I think I saw his episode to when he peaced out. He was scary bad with it. That's a hard one. And Taraji P. Henson, who I adore. I love Taraji P. Henson. I was so sad and disappointed when she peaced out as well and then had her bodyguard finish it for her.
Wow.
But anyway, Demi Moore and Ariana Grande, I mean, because normally, even when a lot of these people go through it and they're like, there's no way I'm going to quit, there's no way I'm going to peace out, I'm going to get through this, but you could see them physically in pain. I mean, you see them sweating, you see them like looking like they're going to pass out, and Sean saying, like, don't touch your eyes.
Yeah.
You know, and all these things. And literally, Demi Moore and Ariana Grande, through the whole entire thing, just like, completely composed, answering the questions, like, you know, they were having a margarita, and then and then finishing saying, "Oh, is that the last one?" You know, and not saying in like a, you know, like trying to be like, "Oh, look at me" type thing. They're just like, "Oh, is that the last one?" You know, they were on message. They got their points across with whatever they were plugging. They answered all the questions, but just like. Compared to anybody else, even people that have gotten through the whole litany of those wings, and we're giving them such a great promo right now, but gotten through the whole litany of those wings, there's just no comparison.
Yeah, that is a boss move, and if you make it to the end, that's what you got to do. I mean, you got to kind of flex nuts if you make it to the end there. I'm like, oh, that's all of them? Oh, don't you have any more? Which is the bluff of all bluffs, right? Because if they bring you another plate, that's when you're really going to die. But, you know, you got to act like you want another plate anyways if you make it to the end. I can understand
that. There's this one that's like the worst one called the bomb, the insanity. And it's not even like a tasty one. I think that company just makes it to make it just nasty. It's like the type of thing you'd have at a party just to see if you could tolerate it. It's not something you'd ever buy for possible enjoyment for somebody that likes spicy things.
Okay.
It's just to see how, if you can, it's supposed to taste like battery acid.
Okay.
Or worse. But anyway, and I remember, I think it was, I'm trying to remember if it was Demi or Ariana Grande, but was eating the bomb and totally unfazed and just looked at it. She goes, this one's really bad. This one's just really terrible. There's just nothing good about it. Mm-hmm. But like just totally unfazed. Just like
wow.
And most people are screaming. They're like, you know, like praying to God.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, there's long pauses because they can't even physically continue answering questions. They're like asking him to stop asking questions so they can gather their thoughts or something. And they were just like, well, this one's terrible. Well, it's really awful. I mean, there's really nothing good you could say about it at all.
Yeah. Wow. That is crazy. Well,
totally unfazed. It was awesome.
The amount of entertainment that you're describing there and seeing some of them endure that can only be matched in a place. How's this for a segue? Like JB's Fantastic Finds, which you can find, of course, on Facebook twice a week. And talk about that, John. Give it a good, healthy, hearty plug, as we like to do here, because you have really been blowing up with this thing the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, speaking of another ride into insanity, as we like to say, the wildest ride of programming you will find on the TV, interwebs, or wherever you consume your media. It's the little engine that could. I mean, something that started off as a little side hustle. Get this, man. Get this. In January 22nd of 2019, okay, that's when we did our first episode. We were like part of like various multi-show channels or multi-show groups on Facebook, and then we sort of branched off on our own in 2021, and then the national TV commercials hit in August of 2021, so it's over 3.5 years for that, and the rest is history. But people finding their treasures, finding a lot of new friendships on the show, a lot of fun times, and it's just, it is a wild ride into the bizarre of people having a lot of fun, spreading a lot of positivity, and getting some treasures that are a tangible manifestation of the fun they have on the show.
That really is amazing, the way that it has blown up. And the thing that I have always admired with you of the many things here, just as I said before, you know, in terms of Fitness Made Simple, and then subsequently the Vine stuff here, the constant reinvention, man. You have, you know, stayed, you know, wherever the zeitgeist is, whatever the thing of today is going to be, you have managed to find your way into it. And that is something that very few people can say. I really admire that.
I guess I got inspired by Demi Moore.
Yeah, yeah. A survivor like her, huh? How about that?
You got to be a survivor. You got to be able to reinvent yourself. And it's funny that a lot of the things that I've done, it's weird. I remember one time I was walking down the streets in New York City, and a little girl, like, I don't know, maybe like 10 or 12 or something, comes running up to me in the streets. She goes, oh, my God, it's the Wake Up Words guy. It's the Wake Up Words guy. And, you know, can I get a picture? And then her dad is like maybe 10 steps behind, and her dad comes up, and he goes, oh, honey, you have the wrong person. That's the Fitness Made Simple guy. And I'm like, you're both right.
You must never get sick of that. That's a great story. That really is a great story.
That was a true story, and yeah, totally bizarre and amazing. But he goes, and she goes, well, and I'm like, you're both right. Your dad knows me from Fitness Made Simple, blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. And then she goes, oh, I see you all the time on Vine with Wake Up Words and Instagram. And I'm like, yeah. And then he goes, what do you do now? And she was showing him like some of the, you know, Wake Up Words and stuff like that. He goes, oh, wow. And then after that, you know, JB's Fantastic Finds ended up coming.
Which is like selling
auction items, things, jewelry and other types of treasures and trinkets and stuff like that, that could be very old, very new, from a few dollars to a few hundred dollars, to, you know, things from the worlds of myth, fantasy, and legend that people just have fallen in love with. And that show is, to be honest with you also, man, the very first thing that I ever did, once again, did it completely starting off as a little side hustle thing. But that has been successful from day one. Even if it made like next to nothing, it still made more money than it cost in the beginning, and then it's grown considerably since then. It's never anything, it wasn't something that required like a huge investment up front, type thing, and then to, you know, to build it to something bigger, if you know what I mean. It's something that was just like meant to be, and it's something I never, like with Fitness Made Simple and Wake Up Wars or whatever, I go in saying, I want to make it as big as I can. I never expected them to be as big as they became. And I'm very fortunate that happened and very blessed. But I put a lot of hard work into making that happen. With JB's Fantastic Finds, it's been a lot of hard work, but there was never a planning session where I go, I want to make this the biggest thing in the world, and I want to do this and this. It's just been a steady building. Like, well, let's just try this. Maybe we'll try this today.
Sure.
Maybe we'll do that. And it's just, so it's something that was in some way meant to be, I always think.
Yeah, I think so. And I live for the day when somebody walks up to you and says, "Hey, aren't you the 7-Eleven Chronicles guy?"
No. What are you saying? FDH dignitary.
FDH lounge dignitary. Yes. Somebody should. I should be selfish and look for somebody to say that to you. Yes. So we could go by that. But I think from now until the foreseeable future, it's going to be the "Hey, aren't you the JB's Fantastic Finds guy?" And again, like you said, the way that it's blowing up there and how you have, essentially, and we've talked about this previously on the show here, really sort of invented something that's kind of a mashup of genres because, you know, you're bringing a little bit more comedy and entertainment than one would generally bring towards any type of auction type deal here. But by the same token, you are, providing folks the opportunity to acquire these things. So it's really a mashup of genres that you've sort of created unto yourself here.
It's the magazines, because we've been written up in a few magazines and newspapers and various publications, and a lot of them say it's a combination of stand-up comedy, talk show, and home shopping.
Yeah.
So I'll receive it. And as far as being recognized in the street, most people do not come up to me running up saying, "Are you the JB's Fantastic Finds guy?" Actually, what they do is they go, "Sold, sold, sold," which is obviously the taglines from the commercial. But so they say, "Sold, sold, sold," without even saying my name or anything. They just say it. Just they come up and go, "Sold, sold, sold." Or however they do the intonation, because I do it in a few different ways.
Yep.
Or they say, "Oh my God, it's the sold, sold, sold guy." So those are the two things.
Because of the commercials, when I mentioned to my dad that you were booked for this week, he gave me a sold, sold, sold. So, yeah.
There you go. Yep, that's what it's known as. That's it's. I'll get kids and stuff like that from across the street screaming sold, sold, sold. Or and I could have an octogenarian in Trader Joe's coming up to me. And he looks up at me. Sold, sold, sold. And I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
God bless those commercials.
Yeah. Well, everybody needs a catchphrase. So there you go. That's. It's working out great for you, and a wonderful.
I'm fortunate that it even took hold. As I said before, when we were talking about people that say negative things and stuff like that, the fact that you're living rent free in somebody's mind, whether things are hated or loved, the fact that something in this, when there's so many sources of media, so many sources of entertainment, so many sources of information that you can be receiving stuff from, the fact that anything can get into somebody's mind, to the fact that they're repeating a catchphrase like sold, sold, sold. I'm just very humbled and very blessed to have that. That's just that's just unbelievable, because there's very, very few things that when you're bombarded by so much information and so many different forms of entertainment or media every single day, that anything can take that type of hold, that it registers in your mind, that you remember it in some way. That's a big thing.
Well, and it's, as we've kind of alluded to previously on the show here, that your grasp of all things regarding the squared circle is more tenuous than mine, which borders on fanatical here. So you may or may not get the reference, but Chris Jericho, pro wrestler, rock star, actor, whatever, you are sort of what he is in pro wrestling. You are sort of the Chris Jericho of pop culture, because he has reinvented himself over the course of about 30 years, just repeatedly. That's like the number one thing he's going to be remembered for when he's gone, is all the different reinventions just within pro wrestling itself, changing characters, trying to stay up with the times, everything like that, but also mixing in the outside stuff. Yeah. So essentially the Chris Jericho of pop culture. So
I appreciate that.
Yes, yes. That is definitely where you're at, John. And so glad that FDH Lounge Dignitary is amongst your many titles and accolades here. And always a privilege and a pleasure to get you in talking about the Oscars or anything else we talk about with you here on the show. So thank you once again for being here for part of what is always a great and fun discussion, my friend.
You are awesome, and I, as I said, off camera or off recording, I cannot believe we have been doing this since, I guess, regularly since 2014 and started in 2012. I have no conception of time at all, because it feels like just yesterday, and I consider you a friend, my man, and much, much success as you conquer new horizons with the FDH Lounge.
Yes, thank you, sir. Pleasure to privilege to have you as a friend. And let me do my best McConaughey in regards to what you said about time. Time is a flat circle. That's probably the worst McConaughey that anybody's ever done. I will go into Guinness Book of World Records for the worst McConaughey. But, you know, leave it to you to bring that out in me to even want to attempt that in the first place. It's always fun. It's always – nobody gets me looser and more ready to laugh than you, John Bastow. So, you know, it's always great doing it with you. Thanks, buddy. And I look forward to getting you on the next time here. And thank you, everybody, for checking us out for FDH Lounge mini episode 1815.